related to the real world of RF engineering. That bothers me. It bothers me that the curriculum for that course has had very little change in most schools since a little bit after World War II. And you mean to tell me wireless engineering since World War II hasn't progressed? That's like saying computers haven't progressed since then. And you've heard me say many times, the computer engineering course and the computer science course is updated every semester to try to keep it current with a moving target. And I guarantee wireless engineering is also a moving target. I'm in the process of doing consulting for companies where we're devising antennas, writing patents, and so here we are a lot of years downrange designing brand new antennas for brand new locations and getting patents on them, and it's just using good common sense, good ham radio, crafty techniques for squeezing tough, small antennas in small areas and giving them medium good performance. That's all that was required. And that's an art and a science that's not taught. You have to learn it by the hard school of knocks. You got to be there. And just about everybody who's got that skill, most likely, is a ham radio operator. And he got that skill because he loves the subject and was doing it in his basement and in his backyard or at an antenna contest by the VHF Society or whatever. And he's got a group of buddies that do a similar thing and compare notes. Let me drop.
Dick? Good evening. The time is 11:01.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you make a quick comment or something?
You got it.
Yeah, it sent me the project. I did something, and most people didn't believe you can do this. I took a little antenna analyzer, and all we did, like a MFK analyzer, and I made a quarter wave stub out of a G connector. We shorted one end, we put an end connector on the other end, we cut the cable, we experimented, we got exact, and the second harmonic is down by 35-40 dB. We made a second harmonic filter out of a piece of MMR 400 cable. You don't want that at school.
But that's well covered in the Hints and Kinks in QST magazine. It's also covered in the antenna book. So the practical sources will tell you how to do that. And it's not black magic. It's amazingly easy. Any number of half wavelengths into a short circuit, or any number of odd quarter wavelengths into an open circuit as a stub, are a beautiful filter of a chosen harmonic frequency. They act as a notch filter at that frequency. And getting a notch that's 30 dB down and maybe 40 dB down with careful tuning is not too difficult. And the total price of materials to do that is a couple of dollars. The price of the connectors, the cable, and the T-connector. Easy, once you know what you're doing. A smart, crafty ham can take commonplace, available stuff that's in any electrical shop and convert it into these kind of working hardware. You take a look at the April issue, 1972, QST magazine, front cover. Let me drop.
W2VL repeater.
I know that issue because it's got my article in there on the 432 parallel kilowatt strip line amplifier. But on the front cover is a 20-gallon, I think it is, galvanized garbage can being used as a cavity filter on 6 meters. And it's got extremely high performance because it's a large, low-loss, voluminous cavity resonator. Who would ever think you can take a galvanized garbage can, properly use it, and make an extremely high-performance filter out of it? Very few dollars required. Yes, it takes up some room, but it's very hard to get that performance any other way. Probably has an insertion loss of less than a tenth of a dB, and it probably filters out the harmonic frequencies by 50 dB. That's a lot of dBs. That's a lot of bang for the dollar. And so an equivalent out of Air Heliax Hardline can give you a similar filter on 10 meters. It doesn't need that much volume. the quality of a filter. Let me backtrack. Every distributed cavity filter is a piece of transmission line with shorts and opens on the ends. The definition of a cavity resonator is it is a piece of low-loss transmission line with the signal bouncing back and forth inside, and the length is carefully chosen so the signals bouncing back and forth stay in phase. That's the definition of resonance. And as long as you take, let me pick a number, an inch and a quarter diameter air card line, maybe heliacs, of the right length, lay it in the corner somewhere, and put shorts and opens on the ends and coupling loops, you can make one hell of a filter out of that. You can't buy it, because there ain't enough need for that, that no one has got it on the shelf as a commercial product. But to build it with a little hand craftiness, easy as all hell. And to get performance out of that, it's something to write home about. You've got the technology. Go do it. Back to you, Harry.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, Dick. You look at this cabinet, and you got a bulkhead connector, and you got this T connector, and on one side of the T connector is a shorted cable, and then you got the output of the transmitter. Dick, if I was to, we're getting about a half meg wide with the LMR 400. If I went to, let's say, inch and a half or 7/8, if I went to 7/8 and did a short like that, use a shorted end, what do you think my bandwidth would be at resonance?
Your bandwidth will be not too much different, but the depth of the notch gets deeper and deeper as you make it lower and lower and lower. Now, 10 meters wavelength is almost 30 feet. Quarter wave, therefore, is around what? 7.5, 8 feet. 7.75 feet, something like that. A cavity resonator, 7.5 or 15 feet long, a little bit hard to contain it. Nothing stopping you from folding it with right angle connectors, coaxial right angle connectors, maybe homebrew. The closer and closer you get to copper center conductor, air, copper outer conductor, and large diameter, and nothing magic about 50 ohms. The cavity resonator itself, I think the ideal impedance is 70 ohms, because the loss of cable as a function of frequency goes to a minimum at 70 ohms. So a 70 ohm transmission line used as a cavity resonator with the right diameter of center conductor, maybe made out of copper water pipe, and the outer diameter maybe out of copper irrigation tubing. And because the outer diameter is so large in diameter and so much larger, lower in resistance, there's a slim chance it can be made out of aluminum to save weight. But I worry a little bit about now the metallic interface problem to similar metals. But you've got a dry environment if you're doing it indoors. But still, you could homebrew this piece of transmission line with right-angle connectors to fold it into a reasonable-sized cabinet. And so the Q of the cavity, and therefore the depth of the notch, is a function of, let me drop, how low you make the distributed line as the transmission line, how low you make the insertion loss, and whether or not you cascade two of them with a quarter wave of line in between them. And by the way, when you have a quarter wave of line in between, or is it half wave? I'm not sure which. One or the other makes it the most desirable, where you get the cascading effect. If you get 40 dB of notch out of the first one and 40 dB of notch out of the second one, if you synchronously tune them, you'll get close to 80 dB of notching and maybe beyond. And if you stagger tune them, you can now get that notching over a little bit of the bandwidth if that's what you want. So the kinds of cavity filters you want to build, if you look at the ARRL Special Techniques Handbook, which covers things like duplexing filters, you build your version of duplexing filters out of your kind of available materials at a Home Depot, you're going to get hair-raising performance out of it, Howie. You've got the technology, you understand the concept, just choose the available materials, put them together the right way. The critical junction is the bottom of the resonator, if it's a quarter-wave resonator, the so-called short-circuit end. You got to work very hard at making a high-quality short circuit. Therefore, it's very tempting to use my old adage. Let me drop. And my adage is, the best way to make a short circuit is a quarter wave into an open circuit. Therefore, to make the resonator half wave electronic instead of quarter wave gives you the quality of a short circuit, and it's worth considering. And by the way, a half wave resonator has roughly half the bandwidth of a quarter wave resonator for a whole bunch of reasons. The signal to stay in phase, to bounce back and forth, is going through along the line, so therefore off resonance, it goes out of phase faster. You'll get a sharper notch, if that's what you want, and a deeper notch by making it a half wave resonator instead of a quarter wave resonator. You pick up the benefit twice. You've got a higher quality short circuit in the center, because you're not trying to create a short circuit. You're doing it electronically by another quarter wave into an open circuit. And your resonator is twice as long, making it a deeper notch, lower insertion loss in the passband, and more narrow narrowness of the notch. Got to be careful with that, but still, I think you see the method of getting from here to there. Back to you, K2RIW.
Steve Turrell.
Stand by a minute, Howie. Go ahead, Steve.
a few things. Your analogy that you said 70 ohm collects was the lowest loss, I don't see that. The loss is going to either be dielectric or I2R losses. And if you're using an anti-electric, there's not much loss there. I would think that the higher impedance you go, the lower the loss. And another one was going into a half wave and making an open circuit, I would think it wouldn't be as good a open as you can make a short into a quarter wave.
In both cases, you've used some very good common sense, Steve. If you go to Marino's book on microwave transmission line principles, Marino goes through all the derivations and proves to you that with normal materials, copper or silver as the semiconductor and outer conductor of a coaxial system as an air line, it turns out that the lowest loss of a transmission line occurs at 70 ohms. That's the whole reason why all of Europe is on a 70 ohm system. All of cable TV is on a 70 ohm system. You would think as a cavity resonator, you would get less loss at a higher impedance. Good common sense. But to make, if you're keeping the outer diameter constant and you want higher impedance, you're making the center conductor smaller in diameter. The center conductor has a lot more resistance than the outer conductor. By making it smaller in diameter, you're raising its resistance, and all of your resistance is I2R loss. From that analogy with an airline, you would think a 10 ohm impedance would be the lowest loss. But when you go to 10 ohm impedance, your circulating currents start climbing, and now you're getting much higher voltage across the gaps. So however you're suspending the center conductor, you start getting dielectric loss. People have been down this road. If you keep the outer diameter constant, you get the minimum loss with 70 ohms or 72 ohms. It's a very broad curve, but the minimum loss is 72. Go for it. When it comes to a short circuit, you would think just soldering a flat plate across the end of the line is going to give you a good short circuit. Good common sense. But how did you get that flat plate there? You soldered it. What's the resistance of the solder? You're looking for micro-ohms or nano-ohms here in order to get full performance. Out of normal materials, you can't do that inside of a closed system where you're soldering on that end connector. Whereas if you don't make a short circuit there physically, but you make the short circuit there electronically by, from that point, extending it another quarter wave out the end into an open circuit, you create nano-ohms of equivalent short circuit. Been there, done that. And if you don't believe it, build yourself a kilowatt amplifier at 432, build it out of a quarter wave resonator, stand by, watch the short circuit end burn up, watch the short circuit end burn up over and over again on your quarter wave cavity resonator, and you go to a half wave resonator with a flapper tuning capacitor and it runs ice cold. And you say, holy blank. Wow. Why didn't I think of that earlier? You talk to any of the guys who have ever built a high power 432 wave, 432 megacycle, kilowatt transmitter with quarter wave cavity. The first question you ask him is, how often do you replace the bypass capacitor at the short circuit end? How often do you burn up the short circuit end? It happens over and over again. You go to a half wave resonator and it never happens again. There ain't any better way of seeing real insertion loss in the real world than watching it burn up. And that is dramatic. That slams you right in the face and says, there it is. Back to you, Steve.
I see what you're saying. I was thinking that you would actually take the outer diameter and make it bigger to make the higher impedance. And I'm still thinking that the quarter wave with a good short at those frequencies would actually be a better, resonator. But I'll have to think about that. I know at the higher frequencies to get an open is very hard. Try to make an open at, let's say, 26 gigs or 18 gigs or something like that, and nearly impossible because it does radiate. But maybe at 29 megahertz, you might be right about that.
Oh, hold on now. At 28 gigs, yes, your connectors will resonate because your center conductor, if it's a coaxial system, is not suppressed enough. If you're building tri-plate strip line, and you want to know your strip in the center, is it upper and lower ground plane, nothing but an air gap across the edges, you want to know how fast does it radiate? How good is the shielding? And the answer is, you can derive it, you can look it up in the good handbooks on strip line techniques, strip line techniques, the answer is 27 dB per ground plane spacing. If I had in airline 1 inch of ground plane spacing, and if the edge of my center conductor of the strip line is 1 inch inside of that open end, it is shielded by 27 dB. Make it 2 inches inside. In other words, extend the upper and lower ground plane another inch, and you've now got 54 dB of shielding, and so on. So when it comes to a coaxial resonator, a coaxial connector, if that center pin was suppressed inside the outer conductor on the open circuit, it would not radiate. 27 dB for ground plane spacing, you just make the circular equivalent as opposed to the triplate strip line equivalent, and it becomes a shielded structure. You didn't have a shielded structure because you're approaching the situation of a quarter wave ground plane radiator. My mind's going blank here on the guy who lives in Smithtown who's on 10 gigs with me. N2LIV, Bruce, one time was transmitting a few milliwatts into an SMA male connector in his backyard, a couple of milliwatts. He's 10 miles from me, and I heard that signal on 10 gigs. And it was coming from that open-ended piece of SMA male connector. He could put a bullet on that with a short circuit, with a cap. He could put a cap on the end, and the signal disappeared. I was hearing the signal radiated 10 miles away from his backyard, sitting on top of a step ladder, through the trees, on 10 gigs radiated by an SMA. And all he had to do is suppress that center conductor a little bit, and that signal would disappear. You could do the same thing if you want to, Steve. Back to you, Steve.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. You're basically making waveguide be on cutoff, so you're right. It's almost attenuates God. Probably on the order of what you said. I have to actually think about it. But, the best filter in the world. So I see what you're saying.
Now, when it comes to resonators that you want to suck out a signal or bandpass a signal, you can make a quarter wave resonator with an input and output coupling loop, and you'll get a certain performance. Make a half wave resonator with a coupling loop in and out, still in the center, at the same point where the short circuit used to be. The signal that now bounces back and forth is bouncing back and forth through twice as much transmission line. Therefore, when you're off resonance, the phase shift of those bounces happens twice as fast. Ain't that a fancy way of saying it's got to be half the bandwidth and it's got twice the Q? A half-wave cavity resonator built out of the exact same materials has exactly twice the Q unloaded as a quarter wave resonator out of those same materials. Do you see the principle, Steve?
Yes, I do. I'm neglecting losses of the cable. I see what you're saying.
WB takes W.
You got it, Howie.
Yeah, just well as you know, the way I shorted, I didn't terminate it into a connector. What I did is I took the shield and the hot, twisted it as tight as we could, and then we soldered it. So between the hot and the shield, between the shorts, we did not have solder. But we basically, I had someone twist it and basically made sure that it was a good short. And with an ohm meter, you know, using a high voltage, you know, meter, we could see about maybe 0.01 ohms.
Yeah, the real answer would be to use a four-terminal ohm meter, a so-called Kelvin connection, where you could resolve milliohms, put an amp through it, and measure millivolts. And then you'd really know the number of ohms. And you have to worry about the length of the cable itself into that short and subtract that out in order to find out what the short is. But there's all kinds of ways of confirming this. But you'll soon discover that you can't get a more high-quality short circuit than another quarter wave into an open circuit where the far end of the open circuit is shielded from the outside world, either by waveguide cutoff or some kind of an air-gapped end cap at the end. And maybe you can even put a tuning flapper capacitor out there if you want to get it exactly on frequency. So with simple materials that you can buy at Home Depot, you can make a loaded, an unloaded queue of 10,000 very easily with the materials you've got, Howie. Go to it. KQRIW.
The only thing I will say, and I'm kicking myself because I didn't think of 70 ohm cable. You know what? I had LMR 400. It actually came out to 7 feet. What I did is I used the formula. Actually, I used the formula of 234 divided by the frequency times the velocity factor was 0.85, and multiply that by 12, and I think it came out to about 7 feet. I used 234 divided by F times 0.85, then times 12 to get the inches. Go ahead, Dick.
W2VL repeater.
I see what you did. However, don't lose sleep over this one, Howie. When you look at Marino's book, Theodore Marino, 1948, beautiful little paperback book, Microwave Transmission Line Principles or something like that is the title. Just look up on eBay, Marino, M-O-R-E-N-O, I think his name is, Theodore Marino. Buy yourself a copy. When you look at his curve of insertion loss versus Z0 of transmission line, and you see that the curve gives you minimum loss at 70 ohms, it is a very broad, slow changing curve. The difference between 70 ohms and 50 ohms is significant if you're putting 5,000 miles of cable in as a cable system into a town. There it's significant. For your particular application, 70 ohms versus 50 ohms, it's a couple of percent of difference. Don't lose sleep over that. You're going to come out way ahead by using half-wave techniques if you choose to go there instead of quarter-wave techniques. You'll gain faster than you will by going to 70 ohms versus 50 ohms. Back to you, Howie.
Hey, it's Tura.
Go ahead, Steve.
Just one more little nitpicky thing. When they consider losses, that's into a characteristic impedance, meaning the load is 72 ohms, load 50 ohms into 50 ohm cable, 72 into 72. Now, what does 72 ohm coax do into a, you know, like basically a short circuit or an open? I mean, is it the same loss? I think the Biswas, I guess it's infinite Biswas, but not exactly infinite, but I'm just wondering if it really makes a difference.
Without a doubt, it makes a difference, but you've got a very good point, and that is, if I'm using 70 ohm cable versus 50 ohm cable, and I'm making a quarter wave cavity resonator, the number of micro ohms of resistance that I can tolerate at the short circuit is slightly different. I will admit that 70 ohm cable, maybe you want the short circuit to be under 10 micro ohms, and with 50 ohm cable, you want the short circuit to be under 7 micro ohms, so to speak. Because of the impedance of the cable, the quality of the short circuit changes. But in either case, if you want to get maximum performance as a narrow band filter, or notch filter, or bandpass filter, if you want narrow band, maximum Q, minimum insertion loss of a resonator, You can study it as much as you want. You will go to half wave as opposed to quarter wave. It's opposite of common sense. I'll admit it takes more volume, more length, and maybe you don't want to go there for that reason. But the degree of difficulty of making a short circuit, if you started off with the raw copper that made the semiconductor and the raw copper that made the outer conductor, and at the point of manufacture, you pour the copper into a mold that makes one solid chunk of grain structure from semiconductor across the short circuit end into the semiconductor, from outer conductor through the short circuit into the semiconductor. If you made it in that manner, yes, you're going to get a quality short circuit. You and I don't have that resource. By all the materials we can touch, I don't care if it's silver bearing solder with silver plating on top of it. And by the way, silver plating material, unless it's properly burnished and done by a very elaborate process, you don't get anywhere near the beautiful conductivity of silver on silver plating that you do with a rolled silver bar. Let me drop. Electroplated silver under an electron microscope has got a grain structure to it that's got a hell of a lot more resistance than pure rolled silver would have. So there are many a person that starts off with shiny copper, silver plates it, and wonders why the loss goes up. If you didn't go to a specialty house that has a track record of doing high quality reverse electroplating, if there's a particular characteristic waveform, and you do some electroplating, to do some unelectroplating, burnish it in between, and keep repeating the process. Unless you've gone to a quality, high-quality cavity silver plating house that knows that business, you're not going to get ahead, you're going to get behind when you silver plate. You don't just go to a silverware house that makes the silverware that you eat off of and say, give me some silver plating. Electronically, you'll be very unhappy with the results. I've been down that road. I've seen that disaster. So not even silver plating under normal conditions is going to solve the problem, because to make the electroplating of the silver plating of the quality we're talking about on an inside concave structure where the silver doesn't want it to plate itself there, very complicated, nasty problem. Don't go there. Run away from the problem. Take the end run and go to half wave. If you want the highest possible Q out of a resonator, make it out of any impedance you want, but make it half wave. KQLIW.
I can see. I'm going to put this qualifier. As long as you keep the transmission line losses down.
Generator. Use the tracking generator, a spectrum analyzer. We saw about 0.1 dBs of loss. About 0.1, 0.2 dBs loss at 29. What we did was, the center of the T, we had one end of the T go to the quarter wave stub that was shorted. Center T went to the generator, the other one to the, to the spectrum analyzer. Typical configuration. What we saw, Dick, was at the second harmonic, about 35 to 40 dBs down. All right, not a very big notch, but over a meg, that's what we wanted. We wanted to get a little bit of attenuation. Wanted to protect the second harmonic, do the right thing. And so about 0.1 dB. So if you're running 85 to a couple hundred watts, which we are, there's no real problem. Over to you. It actually worked.
Well, I believe you. And the 0.1 dB of loss you saw, Howie, some of that is not real. You started off with a 50-ohm signal generator, and you used a 50-ohm load. Therefore, any slight standing wave ratio of your T arrangement, of your T stub, is reflective power that your signal generator absorbed. If it's a real transmitter and you reload the final accordingly, retune the final stage, that re-reflected power gets re-reflected forward again and gets radiated. So even some of the Visrock causing in the apparent insertion loss of your stub and T connector with the right transmitter, you won't get that loss. An awful lot of it will go away. The transmitter is nearly a constant current generator. It won't absorb that reflected power. It doesn't have the ability to do it. It's almost electronically an open circuit. So you're better off than you think. 5 dB notch. That's about right what you should get for your particular arrangement. And by either cascading two of those with the right length of cable in between, let me drop, or by using half-wave resonators, you can make that dot notch quite a number of dB deeper if you desire. You have the technology that can make that an 80 dB notch if you wanted it bad enough. I don't think you need it. So you've got a good system going here as I see it. KQLIW.
It's 2RL.
Great to see you.
Okay. He says he measured a tenth of a dB loss in that coax into a 50-ohm system, and into a short circuit it's going to be significantly higher. You agree?
Stand by. He's talking about a tenth of a dB of apparent loss measured with his testing system when through putting a signal through the T-connector, where the T-connector is being designed to notch out the second harmonic. So he's measuring the S21 of that T-connector system, but he's measuring it with a 50-ohm source into a 50-ohm load. Put it into a real antenna, which has no 50 ohms of I²R resistance. It's only got a radiation resistance. Start off with a real transmitter, which I don't care if it's a transistor or a tube. It is a nearly constant current generator, which will not absorb the S11 reflected signal. It's going to re-reflect it forward. In the real world, his tenth of a dB in his laboratory is going to become a 0.05 dB in the real world. Back to you, Steve.
W2VL repeater.
Okay, into a 50-ohm system, I would agree with you. But the fact that he's got it terminated into a short circuit now, I don't agree that it's only going to be a tenth of a dB loss anymore. It's going to go up significantly.
Can I make a comment here, Dick?
You're misunderstanding this, Steve. Stand by. Steve, the short circuit is the stub at the second harmonic. It is a highly reactive thing at the fundamental. The pure reactance creates an S11. It's a shunt reactance that at the fundamental frequency creates an S11. That S11 reflected a certain amount of signal so that the S21 looked like it was a tenth of a dB down. But the signal being reflected by the shunt reactance was going back to a 50-ohm signal generator and being absorbed, turned into heat, and it's lost forever. Put a real transmitter where that signal generator was, which we power match for 50 ohms of load. No transmitter that KF2RL has ever touched is a real 50-ohm source. It is designed to give the desired power output and linearity and performance when loaded with 50 ohms. And since in the real world of laboratory equipment, conjugate impedance matching gives you best signal transfer, everyone assumes that that transistor or that tetro tube is a 50 ohm source. No way, Jose. You put the right kind of instrumentation on that transmitter, and you look back into that output connector, you will see something so close to an open circuit, you'll say, what the hell is happening? Have you ever done that, Steve?
Oh, absolutely. It's to design power amplifiers for a living. But what I'm trying to say is, you're taking the thing, and he's measuring into a 50-ohm system, saying, okay, this is a tenth of a dB loss. The stub or whatever is adding tenth of a dB loss. Now, I'm saying that into a short circuit, you know, your path to that short and back is going to be significantly higher. So, actually, he's probably getting close to that tenth of a dB loss, given that he's getting 30 dB. Let's see, if I did the voltage vectors, he's probably maybe a little bit higher than a tenth of a dB loss as far as his cancellation.
Careful how you calculate now. His 35 dB notch is at the second harmonic. His tenth of a dB of insertion loss is at the fundamental. Two different frequencies, two different losses of the stub as a transmission line, two different qualities of the short circuit at the far end, two different S11s of the T-connector assembly. And yes, if he put a short circuit at the output measurement location of his T-connector assembly, and then measured the two-way short circuit, he's going to get an answer that is difficult to figure out what it really means, because he's now got the quality of the short circuit that you put there, which is far from ideal, reflecting a signal at a certain phase angle to the T connector assembly and then back to your input measuring equipment, your S11 measuring equipment. All I've got to do with that short circuit you want to put on the output of the T connector assembly and put a perfect trombone in there, and I'll give you a host of different answers. Mr. RL, tell me how you would interpret all of that whole range of answers of S11 I'll get as I move that perfect trombone into what you think is a good short circuit. Back to you, Steve.
Okay, I know what you're saying. It's going to be either cancellation or addition. But you're also changing it from the ideal length by doing that trombone. So he's assuming that it's exactly a quarter wavelength, and he has a short circuit at the end. So you're changing the system a little bit.
Can I make a comment here, Dick?
Please stand by. Steve, you're misunderstanding the problem. I'm putting the trombone on the output connector of the T connector. The center conductor of the T connector going to the stub, I'm not changing that. I'm leaving that alone. All I'm doing is, you said you want to put a short circuit on the output of the system and measure the two-way signal going into the system and back out and interpret that as a method of measuring insertion loss. I'm saying that second short circuit you put out there on the output connector of the T connector, the quality of that short circuit and the length of line to it, that's where I want to put the trombone. You're going to get a whole range of answers as your S11 of the input of that system. I thought you wanted to use that as a test procedure better than measuring S21, and I say it's difficult to interpret. Back to you, Steve.
Well, I'm just trying to state that it's, I think Howie wants to get in. I think it's Howie, I guess. But what I'm trying to say is that measuring an insertion loss into 50 ohms and getting 0.1 dB on that transmission line is totally different than measuring that same transmission line into a short circuit, because the visual on that piece of coax that's got the short on it is going to go, drastically go up. That's all I'm trying to state.
Don't agree. The stub is presenting a particular reactance at the center of the T connector at each given frequency. The stub is presenting the exact same reactance or total impedance at any frequency you want, no matter what you do to the signal flowing through the straight through portion of the T connector. The stub doesn't know that. If at your second harmonic the stub is presenting, let me pick a number, a tenth of an ohm resistance to ground, and at the fundamental frequency the stub is presenting a inductive reactance of, let me pick a number, 700 ohms. No matter what you do on the output port of the T connector, that stub will continue to present a tenth of an ohm at the second harmonic and 700 ohms of inductive reactance at the fundamental, no matter what you do. You can jump up and down, you can scream, you can put it into 50 ohms, you can put it into 1,000 ohms, you can put it into a short circuit. The stub will keep doing that. You're allowed to counter that if you like, Steve. Go ahead.
Okay, let's say we take a 50 ohm coax, go into a one-to-one match, you know, a perfect match, and you get a tenth of a dB. And now all of a sudden you're running a 10 to 1 BSW on that same cable. Do you agree that the loss would go up?
Yes. That's a given, and there's a bunch of equations and graphs that will tell you about that. Now, the amount of signal going down into the stub at right angles on the T-connector and reflecting back causes it at the fundamental to present, in my crazy example, 700 ohms of inductive reactance. At the second harmonic, it presents a tenth of an ohm. It will continue to do that no matter what you do on the input end of the T connector, no matter what you do on the output end of the T connector. You're trying to tell me that because I put a short circuit on the output end of the T connector, that what the stub does changes. I say no way in hell. You haven't changed the stub. It doesn't change what it does. It's sitting there on the right angle port of the T-connector, the one going off to one side of your straight through line, he's going to continue to present a tenth of an ohm and 700 ohms of reactance at fundamental and second harmonic, respectively. Yes, the throughput on your T-connector has a certain amount of insertion loss on the signal going forward the first time. It's got a certain amount of insertion loss of the signal coming back, and they add arithmetically. Now, a naive person will say, okay, I've created a standing wave, and the standing wave gives you current maximums, current minimums, voltage minimums. As long as my transmission line, my straight-through line, which we call 50 ohms, as long as I'm operating in the linear region, where I'm not starting to arc over, I'm not starting to do funny things with high power. As long as I stay in the linear region, I have a certain insertion loss for the forward flowing signal at some particular frequency. I have that exact same insertion loss for the reverse flowing signal. Otherwise, you're not obeying the law of reciprocity. Once I accept reciprocity, and let me pick a number, a tenth of a dB insertion loss going forward, if that's true, there must be exactly a tenth of a dB of loss for the signal flowing in reverse. Therefore, the round trip better be 0.2 dB, or you and I have to start questioning what the hell is reciprocity. Back to you, Steve.
Okay, I would agree with you, except that the current is actually doubled, assuming a 50 ohm source impedance, which it isn't. You're right. It is a current source. You're saying that, okay, the current is constant. It's not exactly constant. It actually does go up into a low impedance. But I would think that, I don't know, especially just gut feeling. I'm going to do the simulation. Maybe I'll get a chance to do it tomorrow. That the half wave and the quarter wave are going to perform very similarly.
Hold on now, Steve. You and I have got to really question reciprocity here. I'm going to give you a slightly different example. I got 50 feet of coax cable coming from my transmitter, going into my backyard to my antenna. I do a test where I put a perfect dummy load at the end of that transmission line, 50 ohms, that 50 ohm transmission line, and I measure a certain insertion loss. And let's assume the insertion loss is 1 dB at my favorite frequency. Now I put a perfect short circuit at the far end of the line. Now my 100 watts coming out of my transmitter flows forward, hits the short circuit, and because of 1 dB of insertion loss, let's assume that 90 watts gets there. Of the 90 watts, all 90 reflects back, and I get something close to 80 watts back in the shack. I had a tenth of a dB of I had 1 dB of insertion loss on the forward flowing signal. If that's true, I will have exactly 1 dB of insertion loss on the reverse flowing signal. Because I've got a short circuit on the far end of the cable, I've got a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. On certain locations on that cable, the total current of forward and reverse have added in phase, and the current has doubled. Only in certain locations. Quarter wave away from those locations, the current has gone to near zero. Those are no points of current. So I've got a bunch of hot spots on the cable where the current is doubled. I got a whole bunch of cold spots on the cable where the current went to near zero. When I add it all together for a multiple wavelength cable, if the insertion loss going forward was 1.0 dB, the insertion loss flowing back must be 1.0 dB. Therefore, in the shack, my reflection coefficient will be minus 2 dB. In that example, you're allowed to disagree. If so, we'll discuss it. You got it, Steve.
No, I was just thinking about what I was saying. You're right. I've done that test a million times, too.
Okay, we're slowly agreeing with each other. Now you're allowed to talk. We've almost settled it.
I want to tell you the little test that I did. I had this done. We took a position dummy load, put this on the output of a SiteMaster, read about 55 dB. Now, we added on the output of the SiteMaster the T-connector with a quarter wave stub, and we also put the what do you call it, the load. We had a position load, on one end of the T, on the other end of the T, one to a piece of print, you know, one to the stump. The center of the T, one to the site master. At 29.66, or 29.7, because it's closer to 3, we got about 54 dBm. So, this piece of transmission line stuff presented practically in real world no difference. Now, up at the site, using the analyzer going into the cable, let's say we got about 1.2 to 1 or 1.3 to 1, and then we hook up the stump, we didn't see any difference. The stump at resonance pitch has no effect, has practical no world effect on the SWR or return one.
That sounds about right. The stub, if it was tuned to be a short circuit at the second harmonic, must be a active thing at the fundamental. There are other lengths of stub you could have used which would present a nearly perfect open circuit at fundamental and nearly perfect short circuit at second harmonic. And that would be standby. How would we do that? Yes. If it was a half wavelength of cable into a short circuit, that would be a short circuit, a half wavelength at the second harmonic, it'd be quarter wave at the fundamental, yes. If you use an integral number of half waves at the second harmonic into a short circuit as a stub, it would be extremely close to a 10,000 ohm open circuit at the fundamental. Therefore, except for the little bit of capacitive reactance created by the T connector itself, except for that, there would be essentially no visual on that system. Back to you, Howie.
A halfway transmission line will repeat itself. A quarter-way transmission line is going to be, you know, 180 degrees out of phase. Do you agree with that, Nick? If you have a quarter-way transmission, when we put a way I'm talking about at the fundamental, the operated frequency, okay? If I use a quarter way, if the other end is open, it's going to be a short. If it's short, it's going to be an open. Dick, did I get noisy?
Extremely, like your battery was dying. When I say half wave into a short circuit, I'm talking about second harmonic. If it's half wave, stub, short circuit on second harmonic, by definition, it is quarter wave on fundamental. Quarter wave, short circuit, impedance inversion, open circuit at fundamental, at the T connector. So, a half wave, an integral number of half waves on your stub. And in your case, let's make it exactly a half wave. One half wave on second harmonic is quarter wave on fundamental. Therefore, it is almost a perfect open circuit on fundamental. It is almost a perfect short circuit on second harmonic. I think that's what you did. I think that's what you want. Back to you, Harry.
Absolutely. Now, depending on the outer and inner diameter, the number of degrees, you can actually plot what the attenuation is going to be, or what the bandwidth is going to be. You can actually plot it by saying, okay, every degree is so much of the angle. You can play with the outer and inner diameter. I used this wrong data because that's what I had laying around. But it is interesting to see that most people don't understand this concept. If you can take a SiteMaster or an MFJ antenna analyzer and make a simple four-way stuff and have a four-man second harmonic filter.
Very unusual transmission, Howie. The previous transmission, your carrier went into the noise. This transmission, strong carrier, your audio went into the noise. I'm wearing earphones. I heard everything you said, so don't worry. You're absolutely right. You can plot it on the Smith chart. You can write it as a set of equations. The reflected signal versus frequency has an exactly predictable number of degrees of reflected signal from the short-circuited stub. Very predictable. By the way, every resonator does exactly that. whether you build the resonator out of an LC network or a distributed transmission line into a shorter and open, in either case, it follows some very exact laws of phase angle of reflected signal. Back to you.
The next question I'm going to ask you, where can I get crystal filters? I need to build a pass filter. I need to sharpen up my input. I don't want to go and use coaxial or cavities. I'm wondering, how expensive would it be, do you think? And do you think I can get some... I can lose a TB or two because, you know what, the sensitivity to receive is about 0.16 to 12 into a generator. You know, if I take a generator and go right into the receiver, I'm getting 0.15 to 12 dBs of quieting. Now, so I can give up a couple of dBs because, you know, we're talking about low frequencies. Where do you think I can get a nice crystal filter that will give me maybe no more than about 2 dBs or a dB and a half of insertion loss, and maybe give me 30 kilohertz of bandwidth?
W2ZL repeater.
And you'd like to believe that that's a nice commercial product on the shelf. COTS. Commercial on the shelf. Yes, COTS. You'd like to believe that exists. You have an extremely unusual requirement here, Howie. Don't think anybody manufactures it. And for $1 zillion, they'll do it for you, but you don't want to go there. Mel K2KEY has spent quite a bit of his life building crystal lattice filters, but he was doing it for a Sharp IF strip, which I think he was doing it at 8 megs. And could you make a 29 meg version? I'm sure you could. The whole reason you use crystals is because the basic crystal has an internal Q of something like 50,000. Therefore, it gives you very clearly defined sharp resonance phenomena. The insertion loss of a single pole of a filter is a function of the ratio of the unloaded Q to the loaded Q. That ratio tells you insertion loss. Let me drop.
I have a comment.
So if you start off with a, Mel recognized, you start off with a 50,000 Q crystal, you can get very sharp filtering, very low insertion loss, because you can use pretty tight coupling before you start losing a lot of the Q of the crystal. Now, I think Mel's about to tell us that he was using fundamental crystals at something like 8 megs. At 29 megs, I think you're forced into third harmonic, the third overtone of the crystal itself. Therefore, light gets a little bit more complicated. You've been down that road, Mel, so how would you attack it? K2KEY. K2LIW on the TechNet.
Okay, first of all, Mel, I used 3.58, if you remember. I got a whole pile of them, very cheap, hundreds of them that, pigtail 3.58 color crystals. And, Dick, I went crazy, literally. Unless I picked out crystals that had a Q of over 100,000, I just could not make these filters do what they're supposed to. So, you can imagine what I ran into at that point. So he wants to do it at 29 megs. He's looking for something that's just not within, I think, the realm of what he thinks he's going to be able to get off the shelf, over.
Dick, I understand there are companies out there that will sell you a crystal filter for a front-end receiver. They call it a crystal front-end filter, and they want about four bills. I don't want to pay four bills. But there are companies out there that will give you a 30 kilohertz window, 2 dB of loss, using 2 to 4 poles, but the only problem is they can get destroyed by static or lightning.
Yeah, you've got two choices. And by the way, in about 2 minutes, we're going to lose the repeater, in which case I'm going to go away. I'm going to say 73-year-old guys now. We're going to continue. So I'm going to say 73 and be kind to each other in the future. And see you guys next week. We'll try to solve more of these problems.